when last we graced this tech platform, we were in a room of inky black, opaque water with leg hold traps underneath its placid and little eels that Lash, with remarkable presence of mind, had cast Speak with Animals, and the eels were actually telling her where the traps were because, oh my goodness, they'd been fed with all of your rations, which means you're either going to have to find other food or devour some monster pretty soon. But anyway, leaving that aside, you had ascertained that the only visible way on in this chamber, having dropped from the shaft, was to climb what are presumably steps under the water, because the top couple of steps emerge from the water onto a stone dais with another magnificent closed metal clawed door with a slot in the wall beside it, out of which a volley of heavy crossbow quarrels have just towards you. And that was our cliffhanger ending last time. Because, you know, cliffs hang, that's what they do. Let's just see. Could I have a d20 roll from all of you to see how agile you're feeling at this particular point in time?
Lash got a 9.
15 for Tashram.
Braligar got a 2.
Braligar.
Yes.
Minus 9 hit points, and you're now wearing a crossbow quarrel fetchingly. Well, it punched into you so hard, it just punctured the armor covering your belly and kept going. And it sort of shoved most of that armor into your large intestine, which, of course, all you know is, oh, got me through the guts! Now, Lash, you were rather more adroit. You did the twist and arch away from it. So as a result, you are wearing a crossbow bolt, minus 7 hit points, deeply embedded in your left hip. All of the other crossbow bolts hurtled harmlessly across the room. Tashram did his famous, I can bend over backwards and then spring back up without losing my balance, without even dipping my hair in the water. So he bent over backwards a la bullet time, and a crossbow bolt just sort of powdered his nose for him harmlessly as it whistled past the one that was meant for his vitals, missed him entirely, and shattered against the far wall of the tavern. And now you hear another noise, aside from your own sloshing in the water to regain your balance and grunting in pain. You hear another noise, and that noise is and it's coming from through that little slot that the crossbow bolts issued from. It's almost as if heavy-duty windlasses of the sort that you have to fit to a crossbow are being cranked full tilt by beefy, unseen arms.
Whatever it is, Tashram, kill it, kill it! I've been gutted! Ah!
Oh!
I'm going to uncork one of my healing potions and guzzle it.
Cheers to that. I will uncork one of my other healing potion and down that.
Both of you roll 2d8.
And I'm 10.
I also get 10.
I am going to assume that at this particular point in time, if you are feeling inherently masochistic or just very heroic, you can twist and wrench the crossbow bolts out of yourself as you're healing. Or you can go on wearing them.
No, don't want to wear that.
As much as an heroic scar is very much befitting a cleric of Tempus, this is the thought process going through Braligar's head. No one ever told the tale of the hammer of Tempus with a bolt hanging out of his belly. So I'm not going to be the first. I will wince, utter a lot of foul-mouthed prayers to my god and many others as I reach into the wound. While I drink, and try and fish out as much broken metal and wood as I can, whilst occasionally whimpering quite loudly.
So as you do that, raking it out, something small and white and squirmy, segmented, amongst your gore, a maggot, not to put too far, that was obviously wrapped around the crossbow coral, comes out with your raking fingers and plops into the water, and one of the eels goes swallows it, and Lash hears a thank you from one of the eels.
I attempt to withhold the urge to vomit, knowing the pain that is going to put my intestine in if I do, given that it's still knitting itself back together. But...
Oh, and Lash can feel the minds of all these little eels rushing to circle Bralagar under the water, waiting for the free meal that might come.
This isn't the kind of battle wound they tell you about in the when you're a temple initiate, that's for sure. It's all about heroism, caving in orcs' heads and whatnot. It's not about having to fish through your own guts and pick the maggots out. I shake my head. I consider having some serious words with the high priest the next time I meet her.
And the skull says, maggots. Oh, there's a recipe for that.
I do not wish to hear from you right now, Death!
Are there maggots on my arrow as well? My bolt?
You're stuck in your armor and into your hip, and so therefore the maggots didn't have a free bloodbath to, like, squirm into, whereas he got it right in the guts. So your maggots fell off as the thing hit.
Oh, good! Oh, snacks!
Yeah, and presumably the eels are taking care of the ones that were riding on the crossbow bolts that hit the back wall and plopped into the water.
And snacks back there, guys. Snacks back there, kids.
And you hear this little yum, 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 yum as they go cruising off down the room.
See, I told you I'd help.
As I see them recovering and hearing the reloading of said crossbow bolts, I'm going to try my best to barrel across the room, keeping in mind I was paying attention to where our friends had said snappy things. Avoid the snappy things, get to the stairs, and I don't think I can get all the way to the slits in a move, or can I?
No, because the water slows you. You can't just sprint.
In that case, I'll move as much as I can, and then when I, you know, for the turn finish, I try and just yell out a spell of command towards those slits, saying, stop!
Okay, so you bloosh, 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 bloosh forward. You get to what you can tell by the fact your toes just hit it hard is the bottom step hidden under the water. And you bellow, stop! And the response from the, by the way, it's a single slit, a single long horizontal slit in the wall. The response is, but obviously it sounds like human voices. Could be a half-orc, but I mean, it sounds human. Someone is not impressed with your spell. And that's when three crossbow bolts as one converge on you. Could I have a d20 roll, please, Tashran?
11.
You yell stop, and then being the brave, heroic cleric that you are, you hunker down, chin down on the water, hoping that the fact that there's ascending steps right in front of you will shield you from the worst. And sure enough, they do. And three crossbow bolts part your hair as they whistle over you. Unfortunately, you had forgotten that your two companions, having just wrenched crossbow bolts out of themselves, are standing right there. Could I have a d20 roll from Lash and from Bellegarde?
Damn you, Tashram! Take the bolts like a man, you coward!
12!
17.
And you agile dancing clerics do your thing, and the bolts hurtle harmlessly past you and crash against the far wall. And then you once again hear that frantic whirring noise. Crank, 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 crank.
Okay, I'm going to charge at the... I guess it's like a vertical roll, a column, I guess, of almost shelves from which these bolts are being fired. No?
No, it's a single horizontal firing slot in the stone wall, right to the right, your right, of the metal double doors.
Well, in that case, we can either charge straight for the door and try and barrel our way through. Or we can make life difficult for these individuals with their crossbows by firing something back at them. But they do have the benefit of concealment. Charge through the door, heroically!
Okay, you heroically slosh through the water. Now, Tashram, he's going to slosh right past you. Are you going to burst into forward motion with the same velocity and trajectory and belt up the steps together?
Yes, I'll get my flail ready, and sort of just as he comes to the side, I get up and go for Tybora!
Right, so a gentle, quiet house call then. Right, and up the steps, you splash and race across the dais and slam into the metal door and wrench at it. Are you pulling? It's got a pull ring in the middle.
I think if I'm charging, my first instinct is going to be to shoulder bash against it, and if it doesn't move, then I pull back.
You shoulder bash into it. There's this ominous boom. You are aware, being an experienced cleric and therefore knowing basic temple physics, that when you are against the door, it's going to be very difficult for anyone firing through that slot to actually hit you, because you're too close to their side. They can probably rake with crossbows across the dais behind you, but when you're close to the door, you're out of their line of fire. Which is a good thing, because the door is very, very solid, very, very hard, seems to be locked, or at least it doesn't give as if it's open, and it just, you will slam into it and ricochet, rebound back a few paces with your shoulder nicely numb.
Can I see the person we just heard cranking and laughing through that hole?
All you can see is a dark slot.
I want to get up there at least. I want to hightail it up to the door.
So
as
you
well.
Are charging right behind your two companions up the steps and onto the dais.
Yes, very much so.
You see and hear Balagar slam into the door and reel back off of it, because he just can't punch a cleric-sized hole through a solid metal door.
Lash rubs her hands together, kind of stretches her fingers, and starts to inspect those doors for a lock, for an opening, for a mechanism.
Oh yes, there is a keyhole this time, right underneath the pull ring, in the center where the two doors meet. These are metal-clad doors. You don't know what the metal is cladding. It might be oak, it might be something else, but they look very solid. They also look shorter than the doors that topple over a room above you, but they are similarly magnificently armored.
Hey, kids, is there a key somewhere in here for this door?
The eels don't seem to capiche the word key.
Death, destroyer of worlds, is there a key in here?
My best guess would be that if you find the mercenaries, they will definitely have a key. But that's probably how they got through that door. And they're probably on the other side of it.
Yes.
If you are extremely holy and can magic that door open, or you're really temple thieves, like all clerics are, and have lockpicks, or... perhaps you just have handy crowbars, you know, that bring the holiness down upon anything that can't move.
We do have hooks and crowbars and the like that we could use.
Here's what I am going to do. You guys work on that. I'm going to wrap and light another torch and shove it in the slot.
Okay. And where are you standing as you shove it in the slot?
I'm going to do it kind of sideways. Like, not... I'm not going to stand, like, in front of it to be a human pin cushion.
You reach out and side stretch, you thrust a flaming torch into the slot. A crossbow rips out of the slot right beside it. Oh, let me help. but of course it can't reach you, angles being what they are. It can't reach any of you, and it ricochets and shatters harmlessly off the side wall. And you hear a da-da-da from behind the... You can't make out the words, but you can certainly make out the sentiment.
Well, I'm going to quickly, yes, try and get one of my iron spikes into the middle of the door, if I can, and start using my mallet, which I have. I do have a few things in this sack.
Okay, when you say spike, you are trying to drive them between the two double doors?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Not just, like, drive a spike into the middle of the door panel. Okay.
No, at the actual opening, so, like, trying to... I'm not sure, obviously, what the lock is, but trying to, like, you know, at that part where the doors meet.
And as you do this, as you're hammering away with your spike, you hear a clack from inside the door. And one of the doors that your spike is driven between them, at least just its point, so you can feel one of the doors move slightly outwards, right as the clack sounds. Like one of the double doors just sort of gave a little bit outwards towards you. So you don't think it was anything you did.
I withdraw the spike and mallet. I sort of look at Balrogar going, I think we have company. And I get my weapon ready, expecting that maybe people from behind are about to push open the doors.
Well, as I have, I believe I can use the spell more than once, I am going to beseech Tempus, if there is some Dwoma thief or malicious intent behind this door, dispel it! Cast away any magic about to assail us! And I cast a dispel magic in the direction of the crack between the doors, just in case there is either a magical trap or magic user behind there that's attempting to assail us.
And you immediately hear, oh, what a world! What a world!
That was surprisingly fruitful. Come, Tashram!
All my power and wickedness is gone.
Do the doors come open?
They don't seem to.
You pull the door, I'll charge in.
I do that. I look behind to Lash and say, Shanta, be careful!
She just nods her head silently and gives a tiny little salute and gets ready to pull open the other door.
Okay. Right. So, each door is yanked open, and Bralagar charges through. Brilliant tactic. Bralagar, could I have a d20 roll, please?
You may. So far, this tactic has never failed, he thinks. Because crossbow bolts, polyps, and various other things attacking him, he sees as success. He's not dead. I roll a healthy-looking 18.
Bralagar charges forward, and Bralagar is waving his which weapon?
I'm wielding a hammer.
Your two companions adroitly, almost as if they've been doormen for door persons, door wardens, door ladies, whatever, for years, smoothly draw the double doors open in unison. You charge through the opening gap and straight into the maw of the waiting shark. There is a shark swimming in midair. No, there's no water in this room. Oh yes. This 50-foot square room is carved smoothly out of solid bedrock.
I'm paying very little attention to this, Ed. my eyes are fixated on the shark, the architecture around me.
The inside of the shark is a series of concentric cartilage. Okay, but your two companions see that the floor is level and the ceiling is about 10 feet above it. Your door has entered the room in the center of one wall, and there's another door, a single slab of stone, pull ring suggesting it opens towards you, no visible locks, right across the room from you, in the center of the far wall. These are the only two doors you can see. In the center of the room is a 15-foot long, 10-foot wide and high cage made of iron bars, welded together, all of them as thick as your wrist. It has a door at one end which stands open, and obviously, out of this cage, came cruising in the air as if it was in salt water, was this huge shark, its jaws agape as it engulfs you. It's wreathed in a pink and white, brightly glowing, magical aura. It looks very, very sharky.
And how much of Braligar is within the shark after I finish my charge?
Well, sort of from waist up.
Oh, okay.
With your hammer in your hand.
Yeah.
Because you were whirling it.
I was.
So the jaws have not yet closed upon you. These gigantic teeth have not yet bisected you in half. So we're not yet seeing the specter of Braligar's heroic legs running off by themselves until they topple over, because they're still attached to your body, because it has not, in fact, chomped down.
There's the passing thought that goes through Braligar's mind. He wonders, has Tempus's ability to dispel these magical duomas escaped me? But I can't focus on any kind of self-doubt. I am within the belly of the beast, almost literally.
You could fit inside it. You can keep going and fit inside.
I'm not going to risk severing myself off at the pelvis. I will regrettably, although my hammer is, one would assume, attached to my wrist via a leather thong, so I'm not going to just drop it, but I will unclench my hand so that I can grip a part of the inside of the shark's, I guess, esophagus, as much of a shark may have one, and pull myself deeper inside with a celebratory
Tashram and Lashantra, you see Braligar charge into the gaping maw of the shark. You have a elegant rear view of your friend as the shark seems to convulse as if it's trying to get further around this hammer-swinging morsel. And as it does so, a door that you can't quite see yet because of where you were when you pulled the double doors open, a side door opens, and the room is suddenly full of men and women in motley leather and salvaged metal plate and salvaged scraps of chainmail armor. They have the look of mercenaries slash pirates slash brigands everywhere, belt across the room, ignoring Braligar and cutting around him and going towards that end door.
I look to Lash, just sort of raising an eyebrow at the whole situation.
You hear an almighty clatter, as if something wood and with strings is bouncing on the floor. The shark cruises forward and wedges itself momentarily in the doorway, as in where the two of you yank the doors open, and its jaws slam shut with Braligar inside.
I'm going to... Lash sees all of this, stops her speak with animal voice, and doesn't release the spell, but sees all of these people coming in and immediately knows it's not fun time anymore and puts out her right hand. It flashes with a green light, and she casts Flame Blade. And a flame blade appears.
Okay, and you're casting it not on an existing weapon, but as a flame blade.
As a flame
so
blade.
So where your fingers of your hand, or where your arm grows an extension in midair that is weightless and straight, and is a flaming sword. Or just the blade of a flaming sword. You're right. Okay.
And as Lash does that, I'll step just a little out the door and then extend my holy symbol towards her and cast a spell of bless on her.
Ooh. And she perks up visibly, as in a bright glow illuminates the shed. And she becomes a shining instrument of the god. And her flame blade goes and its flames roar and ripple up and down it. And Pralagar, what are you doing at this precise moment?
I was going to start carving this creature up from the inside with a flame. I am not without bladed weapons. As a cleric of Tempus, I am permitted to wield them.
Yes, yes, and you know this spell like the back of your hand. So even though you can't see the back of your hand at the moment...
I know the back of my hand very well indeed, I can tell you.
Ooh, it's one of those relationships.
Indeed. I have known the backs of many hands. and I invoke, whilst in this fetid, reeking darkness... the inside of this floating shark's maw or gullet, wherever I happen to be in its system at this point, I, through my teeth, whisper for Tempus to enchant my axe. I have a small hatchet. And allow me to cleave through this beast.
And your hatchet bursts into flame. Thunderous, roaring flames. And you smell an immediate reek of charred shark. And all around you, there's this sudden... as the shark enters the first throes of mild indigestion. It is time for... well, I'm going to say Leshantar first, because she is ready. She is ready to deal... and whereas you were casting the flame blade, so she gets your flame blade, she gets first hack with hers at the shark. And Leshantar, right in front of you, framed in the doorway, stuck in the doorway, is a shark's snout, mitt eyes, and big teeth. The jaws are closed at the moment, but it is just about to open, and the gills are flaring. And what do you do?
I'm going to get in a defense ready stance, and say to these people coming in the door, "Oh, thank goodness you're here. We need some help right now." And I'm going to completely just assume they're not there to be hostile to us, and because if they are, we'll have to deal with them in a moment. So, and then I'm going to take a swing at the shark.
Okay, roll.
With my flame blade. Oh, no, that's a 3. I guess I'm a little intimidated by this shark.
You strike a heroic pose and it's a swing and a miss! However, Pralagar cannot miss. Being as he's in the thick of it, so to speak, with stomach acids, sharky stomach acids, churning around him, bubbling and frothing as they strike the flames of the axe that is now blazing away. I will merely point out, as Pralagar decides what part of the shark he's going to charve, it dice or its chitlins or this little sharky liver that he sees in front of him. Well, he sees the end lobe of it. Anyway, as he's contemplating which things he's going to do, so to speak, I merely point out to his two companions that those motley clad armed folks received Leshantar's verbal sally with incredulous looks as over their shoulders as they sprinted across the room to that far door at the end, yanked it open, and pelted through it and slammed it behind them.
based on my center of gravity, I assume, not knowing a great deal about the biology of sharks, that their underbelly is probably going to be slightly easier to carve through than their back. So I am going to hack on downwards and try and cleave my way through as if I'm chopping pieces of wood. Just chop, chop, chop. Trying to hack my way through. No elegance, just roaring and trying to avoid the spitting of acid as it connects with the flame of my hatchet.
Ooh, so it's sort of like chopping at the floor you're standing on. Got it!
Yeah.
but chopping at the floor in front of you.
Yes.
You cannot miss. Could I have three D4 rolls, please?
Of course. So in total, we are looking at 8 points of damage.
Ooh, right. Increased, each one increased by the flame blade. Oh, how nice. Okay. You can now see floor by the light of the flames of your own weapon. Through the shark's belly that you carved and you've slashed an area to ribbons, and can see through it. The shark is squalling thunderously around you. It's sort of like being inside a bell that's being rung by a bell ringer.
I'm not immediately going to try diving out through this hole. I am going to try hacking as many of these gaping wounds as I possibly can. I need to disable the shark from within, knowing that if I survive, this is going to be one hell of a story for the tavern and the temple.
The shark is opening up beneath you. Soon... Okay, you now have to take some care, because if you carve too much of it more underneath you and your legs fall through, then you could end up with your legs standing on the floor, and if the shark moves, because it's desperately trying to back out of the doorway it's wedged into, and it's finding this easy because so much damage has been done to it by the enthusiastic you that it actually can flex and back out. And you risk having your ankles broken and your feet abraded off on the bottom on the stone floor as it flies around dragging you, you know, and crushing your pedal extremities. Oh dear. So you might want to redirect your attack.
I guess to the surprise of my peers, my Timoran friends, they may see my legs start to protrude from the hole and then, for inexplicable reasons, climb back up as if I'm not done with this fight yet. I'm in for round two. And so I readjust myself inside the shark, maybe either pushing myself closer to its maw or deeper into its guts so that the ground beneath me, its flesh, isn't so carved away. I essentially want to do enough damage to this thing to disable or kill it. And if I fall out of it, it may survive. So for now, I'm here to work, damn it.
Okay, so you're hacking away and climbing around inside it. And you have obviously affected it greatly, because it wrenches its way, shedding a bit of its skin as it does so. It wrenches its way free of the doorway and backs straight into its own cage. Not into its own cage, because that's not where the open side is. It crashes into the bars of its cage by backing into it at full speed and rebounded off of it, tail lashing, which leaves plenty of room for Tashram and Lashantar to belt into the room should they wish to do so, without having to worry about getting crushed against the wall of the room by a lashing shark. It is now far enough back. And Vrelagar is bravely riding the shark from within. And you can actually see the fire of his flame blade through rents in the shark's body and through its gills. And it is not seeming to enjoy this moment of indigestion.
Seeing that Barilgar seems to have the matter completely under control, I do, after all, have total faith in him. I sort of tried my best to run to that door, probably reaching it as it closed, and just trying to pull at it, be like, oh god, if you people have locked the door! In fact, wait, even better, if I could, I'll have tried to just throw a spike into the door, maybe, as it slammed shut.
Could I have a d20 roll, please, for this elegant feat of dexterity?
That will be a 2.
You fling the spike. It rebounds right back into your hand, leaving you astonished at your own manual dexterity. The door mocks you. The closed door mocks you. It is not even scratched.
I fall against it a little. And of course, just look up the shark, look at the door handle, and give it a little pull, assuming, of course, it is now locked.
You assume correctly. It is now locked. Tashram is now valiantly, bravely, and in a holy manner, sagging his way down the door in defeat. Lashantar, what would you like to do? You have time. You have scope.
Oh, luck be a lady. And I'm going to run in and kind of avoid any lashing of tail. And I'm going to try to help open the axe wound that I see. I want to try to take my flame blade and help open that kind of up the side.
Oh, okay. And this lashing shark, you just dig in there and rip. You have not felt this butchery like a butcher, like a peerless butcher in your life before, because you've never had the chance to gut something like this that's this big, this alive, and now writhing and lashing in such obvious pain. And so you rip up and peer closely at the wounds you're making to make sure that you're not actually also flaming Bralagar inside. And you are not. You are to one side of him. You're carving a door that he could easily step out if you turned your flame blade sideways as opposed to continuing to rip up. You gonna do that?
I am, and as I'm doing it, I'm just in speak with animals. I'm saying, I'm so sorry.
And you hear this, you say? Deeds, not words! And then it says, humans!
And I keep carving. Well, if you'd spit him out.
It's trying. It's heaving. It's writhing. It's lashing. It's trying to back away and leave him behind. Shark isn't meant for vomiting. Shark is meant for continually moving forward so it can breathe. So it doesn't know what to do except die. And that's what it's doing right now. So what you're hearing is,
all my power and wickedness is gone.
Death scenes are always the easiest. The shark crashes to the floor, which really means it slams down so that Bralagar is now standing on stone floor because his boots are right through giant holes in the shark. He's got a giant door. One side of the shark is missing. It has, its tail is feebly spasming, and therefore its tail is whipping back and forth in its death throes.
I think I'll throw to the left. I think I'll throw to the right. Oh, the hell with it. Throw.
It is beyond thought now. And Bralagar, you can step out to freedom at any time. You will be covered with shark acid, digestive juices.
There's a faith not too dissimilar to my own that is, this is exactly how they would live. And so I wrench myself free from the gaping wounds in the shark's stomach with a triumphant rah, holding my arms above my head, hatchet in one hand, hammer in the other.
Tashram, Lashantar, He smells sort of like a mix of malt vinegar and vindaloo.
Baragar, that was extremely impressive, Baragar. But come, hurry, help me with this door. We're locked in again.
I feel as if blessed by Garagos. I feel like charging through every door.
Are you belting down the room and charging at that door? Which, Tashram knows is locked.
I hold that. Wait, Paralakar, wait. Tempest surely approves of ye. But maybe, Lashanta, is there anything in the where the mercenaries came out of? Pointing to that side door that opened into this main room.
That side door is still ajar.
Oh, I'm definitely going for that side door.
Okay. You go for that side door. Are you going to look through it?
Yes, carefully.
Okay. And what you see is two simple wooden benches. The sort that you've seen monks sit on in many a refectory in the back room of the temple. Simple wooden benches. And then there's a big slot in the wall. And there's a sort of wooden ledger rack on the wall in front of the slot. There are wooden quivers. Well, the flat crossbowmen's, crossbow persons, crossbow firers, crossbow archers, equivalent of a quiver. It's a clip of bolts, which comes in a flat wooden case that opens up, and there's a little snap fastening for each bolt. Most of them have been fired, and there's lots of bolts all over the floor, and there's nothing else in the room. It's a long, narrow room.
Is it like a Gatling gun kind of crossbow bolt, or is it something I could pick up and put over my shoulder?
Well, actually, there are no crossbows in this room. That's what the folks in motley armor were obviously hurling to the floor of the main room, the one that has the shark in it, and they were hurling them there in case you charged after them. You'd be tripping and stumbling all over their discarded crossbows. And most of those discarded crossbows are now kindling because the shark landed on them, rolled around on them, lashed its tail on them. But there's one or two still intact. They are heavy crossbows. You could carry them, but because you're not used to firing a crossbow or anything of this size, they're really meant to be rested on the door sill or to have their own props, as in on a rest. They're heavy as opposed to the light ones. So it's sort of like the difference between carrying a full-on World War I machine gun. Okay, we could drag these along, but you'd probably be dragging them along. And they're windlasses attached to them.
Is there an exit door or to this place?
Just the one you came through. It's just a little firing gallery that opens into this main room that the shark died in, and its cage is still in. By the way, there's no way to get the cage out of the room except by destroying it. Somehow. Wrist-thick iron bars.
I want none of that.
I frown a little as I just start getting the spike out, and as there's no time pressure, it seems, I'm just start hammering in the hinge of the door like, "Will you bloody open, you stupid door? I'm tired of this place. Baragar, what's that awful smell?"
It's Baragar.
Yes, that would be me and the shark's insides over my shoulders and the rest of me.
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we played The Mystery of the Unicorn Chamber for Dungeons & Dragons and the Forgotten Realms. Our Dungeon Master was none other than the creator of the Forgotten Realms himself, Ed Greenwood, and we were also joined by the Gentleman Gamer, Matthew Dawkins, and Lisa Lee. The music was created by Ager Sonus, and was used with permission from their label, Cryo Chamber. We also used music from Baldur's Gate 1 and Baldur's Gate 2 by Michael Honig, used with permission from Beamdog. If you aren't already playing the enhanced editions of these classic games, now is a great time to begin. We would also like to give massive thanks to our champions of the Red Moon, Martin Hoyshobert, Nastasha Rollerson, Simon Cooper, and David, for their generous support. And we'd of course also like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, the show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cult Divinity Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show as a champion of the Red Moon, as well as play Cult with us. Most importantly, that support is what keeps the show going, so do check us out there. Thank you again for listening, and see you soon again.